His Royal Highness Crown Prince Alexander, copyright Christopher Long for Globus Zagreb. It is to be used, if used, uncut, unedited, unadded to in any way whatsoever, and I shall be using it myself for a written article as agreed with His Highness.
Over.
You just come back from Belgrade?
Yes, I have.
Did your first visit to Belgrade?
My first visit to Yugoslavia since I was born.
Can I start with where you were born? You were actually born on Serbian territory.
No, I was born on Yugoslav territory.
Yugoslav territory,
yes.
At the...
Yugoslavia has existed since 1918.
Yes.
Yugoslavia was an agreement between politicians from Croatia, Slovenia and Serbia, and there was a Cardinal Strossmayer involved. It was by mutual consent.
Right.
So I was born on Yugoslav territory.
Yugoslav territory,
yes.
At
Claridge's
Hotel,
in London, 1945, 17th of July.
Yes.
And this was done in agreement with the British government.
So this first trip back to Belgrade, from a personal point of view, what were your feelings?
Extremely emotional trip, of course, and very concerned. I came in peace for peace.
When you got there, was it what you expected? Did it look like what you expected? Did it?
It looked like any country going through problems. I was very concerned about the situation. I arrived with hope to seek peace, dialogue. I was invited by the United Opposition, some 24 parties who put themselves together. They had planned a demonstration on 9th of October. I met them in Geneva. I requested that they should cancel the demonstration 9th of October because I did not want to be associated to a single political party or political rally. So I arrived in friendship, in hope, in secret democracy.
You met the leader of the opposition.
I met the leaders of the opposition.
Leaders of
plural.
The opposition, plural. Did you meet Mr. Milosevic?
No, I was not given the pleasure of meeting Mr. Milosevic, which I find extremely sad, because a dialogue would have been of interest, an eye-to-eye contact. He knows what I stand for. I stand for true democracy.
And the same goes for Kadijevic and Adjic, presumably. You didn't meet either of them.
I did not meet anybody connected with the Serbian government of today.
Did you manage in any of your meetings, I mean, were you able to wander the streets incognito, for example, and
no,
get a feeling for...
I was received by over one-third, and I'm not exaggerating, one-third of the population of Belgrade, 350,000 people, who were looking for peace, who were looking for democracy, better days. There is an economic disaster there.
But in these circumstances, it's one thing to be received formally. Very often somebody in your position can wander out into the streets, listen in.
My face is well known.
It's too well known. You weren't able
to. I have had interviews. I have always stood for the principle of human rights,
yes,
respect of religion. It's been advertised by numerous publications.
Yeah. But you're nevertheless convinced that there is a strong body of people who, under reasonable terms, would seek peace tomorrow.
Absolutely. It's well known in the Western media. There are articles about mass desertions in the JNA. There are articles about command structure problems. There are shortages of petrol, economic problems, jobs, and so on. It's not only Serbia. It is also Croatia, underlined. We must not take particular partisan sides. We're talking about people's lives. I strongly condemn when people are being killed.
Can you describe your greatest fear and your greatest hope succinctly? Does that, can you get a grasp on...
My greatest fear today in Europe at the end of the 20th century is the historical hypocrisy of the past taking place today. We're going into the past of the sides, the old empires. You know what I mean. This is bad. Are we supposed to be a modern people? Are we supposed to be part of the end of the 20th century and the great movement of democracy, the collapse of communism, the rebirth of democracy? Democracy will always win in the end. It will go through great tribulations, but we're delaying it. Why? Because the leaders today are using negative nationalism as their power base. And these are all the leaders.
Would you then say that the continuation of war is simply a method of propping up a bankrupt regime or regimes?
It was bankrupt in any case. Bankrupt since 1945. Capitalism competition has succeeded. We've seen it in the West. If you want to talk about true socialism, that is in a modern company where the employees take part in the participation of profits and they're allowed to purchase shares with the help of the corporation. That is true socialism on a lower scale because they're proud to take part. Ever since communism came on the face of this planet, it has been bankrupt because a command economy will never work unless it deals with specific volatile areas like the military. Example, Soviet military. Example, Soviet space effort. Look at the West. We live in the United Kingdom. Look at the competition of technology here in the European community, in the United States. We're all high-tech in the West. Can you tell me any high technology that took place in the East under communism? Zero. Fact. Why do they want to buy IBMs and all these computers? It's a whole list of them.
Your greatest hope and your greatest fear. We've covered the fear, so
my greatest
go
hope,
for the hope.
My greatest hope is to solve this disaster through negotiations. I believe in self-determination, that people have the right to go where they wish. But in doing so, they must realize the economic costs involved. You see, to set up new nations is an expensive proposition. We already have a world recession, which we're arguing if it's over or not. That's pretty tough. But to set up a new country, new government institutions, custom systems, tariffs, diplomatic corps is most expensive. I'm sure it can be done, but in the end the people pay. So I'm saying, let's put the people first. Let's not use the people to fight against other people. So my biggest hope is that we can solve this problem respecting everybody. But I have news for everybody, not only in the Croatians and the rest of what we may call Yugoslavia. Democracy is a delicate flower and only being nurtured slowly. With this conflict taking place, democracy has taken third, fourth, fifth stage.
Now, I understand what you're saying.
Of course you do, because you were born in the West.
Precisely.
And I hope that you are not being used by this disaster.
No, I'm not being used by anybody.
Let's be careful here.
What I think a Croat or a Macedonian or anybody else would say is, and with the greatest respect, he is not our king. He is the Serbian king.
So what? I am the person who was born in the West, educated in the West, went to work in the West, has umpteen Western connections. I live at the end of the 20th century. I am proud of my historical background. Of course, there are dark areas. Like in any family, there are dark areas. If we looked into any family, we'd find a lot of stuff. Wonderful. Now, I'm sure that if you put the democratic principle, the intention, which I respect deeply, I respect all political parties, all nationalities, you put this all together with human rights, religion, and so on, we can work it out. For the best interests of everybody. Why? Because in the end, we're going to need each other. In the end, we'll have to have some economic tie. Also, don't forget the European community. The European community has its problems, but it's moving ahead. And what is Yugoslavia today is sandwiched between the northern part of the community, with the Austrians joining on eventually, next few years, and the southern part, Greece. So it's logical what's in between the sandwich must connect up. But this is not the way to do it, by fighting each other. We can resolve it around the conference table in a civilized way, respecting points of view. There are a lot of people out there for power and using private armies and militias to do it. This is the Lebanese situation, which we don't want. We must respect each other. We must respect each other's origin. And here is an individual who cares about this respect and doesn't want to act like the Stone Age person.
It's been said to me that it might be possible for you, without too much difficulty, to establish your role in Serbia and to build a commonwealth of Yugoslavia out of Macedonia, Montenegro, Bosnia-Herzegovina, one hopes as one, Croatia and Slovenia. But that would be perhaps something which would build over a period of time as confidence would gain. Is that a strategy with which you would...
I've read about it. It came out in a few publications. Certainly, I am interested if I can contribute to some form of sanity where people do not get killed and people get respected, and we can take the whole region into proper economic stability, political first, and then economic stability.
But would you, sir, see it as a practical thing to say to Serbia, which would mean recognizing a distinction within Yugoslavia? Would you be able to say to yourself that I will begin with Serbia and I will then, if you like...
Well, as you know, the historical connections are, of course, the family is from Serbia. But here is an individual who's proud of his origins, yet standing by the virtues of democracy and all the principles which you and I know. I think it can be taken to a further step. And there are people in Croatia whom I know very well, and in Slovenia and other parts of what is Yugoslavia, who respect this. And in fact, people in these regions, like Croatia and Slovenia, who are deeply worried, particularly in Croatia, about the state of democracy today, and who are concerned about the future, very concerned.
Now, after such a long period of Tito, and such a long period as a republic, how well attuned do you think the Yugoslav people in the largest sense would be to the idea of a monarchy such as Spain or Britain, where there is a monarch whose position is by the consent of the people, by the consent of their parliament? Is that something which people in Yugoslavia fully understand?
Well, there's one thing that the people of Yugoslavia were attuned to was an autocratic king. And that was Tito. Tito was, in the true sense, a medieval autocratic king using force to remain in power, secret service. And this happened everywhere, including Croatia and Serbia, everywhere, all over the land. It was desperate. In one period in time, Yugoslavia had more political prisoners per capita than the Soviet Union, a total disgrace. Yet Tito was recognized in the West as that great non-alignment individual, and people were suffering in the country and keeping quiet, yet emigrating and working as Arbeiter, Gastarbeiters in the Germanys and Austrias and Switzerlands and so on. I mean, nothing to be proud of. So they were attuned to an autocratic Kreil Tito, as he was known as, King Tito. What I'm talking about is constitutional monarchy, where the king reigns but does not rule. It's the government of the day.
This is the consent, by the consent of the people.
Absolutely, it's vital. We have this in the European community. There are 12 members today, and 6 are monarchies, constitutional monarchies. And some of them have multinational factors and so on. But yet again, people are free to come and go as they wish. But I question the state of democracy today, with all this fever, this blood which is being flowed, which I strongly condemn.
Can we take a break just for a moment?
Yep.
We're going now.
All right.
British public opinion. I'm not talking about the government, I'm talking about what you sense from your wanderings, your observations. Where do you think British sympathies lie and what do you think their understanding is?
Well, the United Kingdom has been subjected to both written and electronic bombardment virtually on a daily basis. I get cuttings from the British media every day, and what I can watch on the electronic side, I do. I think it's an interesting situation in that, in as we put it, the Yugoslavia, all lines of communication from the southern part of the country went through Zagreb out. And these are the Eurovision contacts and the landlines. And for obvious reasons, it's one country, Yugoslavia. So therefore, the southern part of the country, as one might put it geographically, was sort of cut off in some ways. And they've, what I've noticed, set up new links, new telephonic links, new satellite links, probably at great cost. I would say that most of the reporting today, probably out of convenience to Western reporters, takes place from, shall we call, the Zagreb area. And I'm talking now as a person with Western education. I don't think this is a balanced point of view.
Would you allow
there are good and bad things on both sides.
Would you allow me to interrupt you with something that was said to me by ITN the other night, and it's off the record if you like.
Sure.
But it was stated to me, Christopher, to be quite honest, neither we nor the BBC can really afford to have a war in Yugoslavia. We had the Gulf War and the Russian Revolution.
Well, we're dealing in the world media today, and this is a very important factor, the cost of sending people on the ground. If you're talking about electronic media, you're talking about a camera team, that is the cameraman, the sound man, and the interviewer. These are 3 people. So you're talking about the costs involved, lodging and transportation, and that's an expensive proposition. And particularly after the Gulf War, a lot of money was spent there by a tremendous amount of networks, even though they did not get the coverage they really desired. They're probably still paying for that, and we're getting towards the end of 1991, into the new financial year, and they have to make ends meet. So there is a point there. Then there's another factor, which worries me a lot, the attrition of correspondence, foreign correspondence, in the present situation. It's higher than the Vietnam case. And I've seen that in the trade newspaper, reading about the trade newspaper, the media. And my heart goes out to all the people. And I was talking about that at lunch with a well-known foreign correspondent, and I was expressing concern about this, which shows that really anybody is target, which shows you how crazy the situation is. So I think the media are hurting themselves financially, are concerned about their life, and it is not a purely balanced point of view. What we're looking for is more objectiveness. Now, an interesting factor here is the historical context, which we still live by in Europe. The Austro-Hungarian side, the old Russian influence side. And this seems to sweep aside the democratic principles which we all want. Everybody's going back into language areas. I think this is wrong, because democracy is not being put first in the forefront. I'm certain with more objective reporting we can really make a big impact upon
this. Now when you say more objective reporting, would you say that the reporting has been more pro-Croat than pro-Serb or pro-federal than you would wish?
I think owing to the geographical situation of Zagreb, if you add up numerically the amount of correspondence in the area of Zagreb, they must be, and I'm certain I'm right, numerically superior than the ones south. There is no doubt, and I'm not exaggerating.
The next question is, because I'm certain that you are either formally or informally in close touch with the British government, how close do you think they are to your aspirations? How much support do you feel that you would get from the British government to do what you would like to do?
The British government is its own entity, which I deeply respect, just as I respect the German government or the French government. What we're looking at are those in all governments in the European community that believe in the democratic principles. But yet again, we're being tarnished. And this is not only in the case of Yugoslavia, but in the case of the European community.
Sorry, we are being tarnished in... Who is we?
We, Yugoslavia.
Yugoslavia.
Is being tarnished in the sense of the old lines, the old allegiances. European community, the same thing. The arguments over the monetary system, the arguments over the political system. The news today, we're getting now an interesting factor coming out of the German-French army initiative, the old animosities, the United Kingdom with France, all these factors, these complex factors within the 12. So what's new? Yugoslavia is just more on the horizon now because the European community has got the initiative, the United States has blessed it to resolve the situation, and it started in Luxembourg, it is now in The Hague, and it will move on, I hope not, to Lisbon. And that's a serious thing. What I am concerned is that there seems to be no end solution. You get these leaders together and they break everything 2 minutes afterwards. But you must also understand there's a lot of private armies involved. So what is the command structure? What is the resolve to do it?
Now, I'm still not quite clear how much support you would get from the British government were you to set, as part of peace talks, as part of a resolution process, your return, may I say, to Yugoslavia. How much backing would the British government give you? How much recognition would you, could you rely on and support?
I have a friendly line to all governments.
And Europe's opinion? Europe's on the same point?
Well, Europe's opinion is for peace and stop this madness. And let's resolve the problems of nationalities, minorities, etc. Economic disaster, which is looming more and more. Let's resolve it amongst ourselves. And the European community can help. They're blessed, absolutely blessed, because they got the cash in the end.
Now, on the Carrington European Initiative, Brioni,
right,
axis, as it were.
Yes.
If I could preface it by saying that what I have myself said in print, expressing my view, was that if the presidents of Macedonia, Montenegro, Croatia, Slovenia, Bosnia-Herzegovina had agreed to meet themselves on the island of Brioni,
yeah,
and invited Mr. Milosevic.
Rione is the wrong place.
It would have been a significant place.
It would have been, but it's the wrong place.
Fine.
It has imperialistic connotations to King Tito of the past.
But if they had actually made an initiative working together as separate independent republics, which they all were with the exception of Bosnia-Herzegovina at that time, and it had invited Serbia, I felt that perhaps that degree of initiative cooperation would have...
Nobody has to be invited. They're all part of it. I mean, everybody must be included.
The point that I was trying to make was that if those republics had made the initiative and asked Serbia to be included, it would no
longer have... Why are you singling out Serbia?
Because in reality, the impression of the peoples of Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Macedonia, not so much from Montenegro, is that they have been given orders, as it were, that they have had imposed upon them the wish of Belgrade.
But so no, I don't think that's right. I think if you look what happened in Slovenia, who were the commanders of the JNA? Do I have to go into that they were Slovenian and Croatian? What do we got here? We got a disaster, a total disaster, all connected to the past. Everybody is responsible. I put my finger on everybody, for the bloodshed. But no revenge. We got to solve it together. My impression is that Geneva is the venue for such a place. Why Geneva? Geneva has a historical context of having hosted numerous peace conferences and initiatives of disarmament and so on, which we're well aware of. And it's permanent. I fully back Lord Carrington's initiative. He has experience, foreign secretary, the Rhodesia, Zimbabwe situation. He's deeply respected within the European community and globally. I don't know, I'm supposed to commiserate with his position or congratulate him being appointed, but I wish him the best. I really believe that Geneva should be used because it's permanent. And apart from the leaders of the republics, which we're well aware of their names and so on, we should include opposition. Now, the elections took place throughout the whole of Yugoslavia in 1990. And some were positive, some were negative. There were problems in every area. But they did take place. And opposition did develop healthily and some problems and so on. And members of parliament, there were elected seats and so on. Now we have some parties who are willing to partake and some fairly intellectual individuals who must be respected. You take, for example, the House of Commons here. All debates that take place are between government and opposition. This is a tradition of democracy, of respect. All we're hearing now is one single line, ironically connected to the past. We have a gentleman like President Tudjman, who was a general under the Titoist years. We have another gentleman like Mr. Milosevic, born in 1943, yet brought up in the system, the situation of his wife. So there is the connection, and it goes around the circle. Now, if you bring in the opposition, yes, some of them are also connected, others aren't. But you bring a more balance. Of course, you would have to be selective and debate, have a commission to debate it. The way I see it is that maybe one could bring it up to the vice chairman type level of this peace initiative by the European community, which could be a great possibility. And I'm certain that the European community would gladly examine that out of the democratic principles. In addition, you know, we have a multi-religious society. And everybody seems to have forgotten the religious factor. We have two cardinals, one patriarch, Muslims, and also Jewish, you know. And these gentlemen or their appropriate staffs should be respected also. along the true principles of religion, and religion believes in peace also, hopefully. And then the third factor would be the question of intellectuals. For years, we've had intellectuals from north to south and east and west in Yugoslavia who belong to institutes, who have studied our multinational, religious, ethnic, etc., etc. problems. And I think some of them have got some pretty interesting material. They've seemed to have been forgotten. Now, you put all these people together, you have a great calming effect. Great calming effect. I believe so. And a true democratic hearing board.
Can I pin you down tightly now?
Yeah.
To a time scale, your role in it. Are you suggesting these talks could take place next week? Next month?
They should have taken place yesterday. You see, really, what is Yugoslavia has to resolve its own problems. We have people who think, who seem, who feel they know the country. So therefore, they must resolve the problems of our country. But if you take European Community, and I have the deepest respect for the European Community, we are the biggest quagmire they've ever seen. And this is from the past, really, from the historical context, and so on.
But let me get it absolutely precise. You would see the presidents of the separate republics with representatives from Vojvodina, Kosovo?
Absolutely. Everybody must be included.
Including opposition leaders?
Yes. Of course, you've got to be very careful that you don't choose a man and a dog. But this is easy to look at. We have results.
Right.
We have clear-cut results. And we've had observers from the European Community, from the United States, and there are umpteen publications which have been put out on these things.
And what would be your role in this, if any, at this stage?
My role is a concerned person for the future of democracy. A person who cares for people. Yes, I have the Serbian background, but why not use it as that person who cares for the democracy and who wants to see everybody get on?
Right.
And fine, if everybody wants to adhere or negotiate and so on, leave it to the politicians. They're the ones who are elected by the people and who are the ones who should rule, providing the democratic principles have been observed. Now, during the elections, there were all sorts of games that took place. I said they did take place, but there will be future elections which will take place. And now, of course, the danger in Serbia is the 10th of November elections may be called off, which is worrying, but we have to see what happens.
Let us suppose for a moment that you had your peace negotiations in Geneva next week.
Or Strasbourg is another one.
Or Strasbourg.
A permanent location.
And let us suppose that in some way the result of that was that a constitutional monarchy was seen as an option, either in a programmed way for the future or in the nearer future. Would you be prepared to move your capital to somewhere else in Yugoslavia if you felt that it would bring...
I don't think we've got to that stage yet. There's many things. I don't know if we'll ever get to that stage. First of all, talk about capitals. You saw the cost involved of moving the capital from Rio de Janeiro to Brasilia. Brazil is still virtually paying for it, even though there were mikmaks played where the president bought the land and then sold it to the country so the capital could be built.
And born in Berlin.
And born in Berlin. These are other things. Well, that cost involved of moving administrative offices to Berlin is going to be very, very expensive. I mean, Bonn is a big bureaucracy. Regarding whatever shape Yugoslavia takes, I'm sure it can be resolved properly at a conference table, providing the leaders of today's Yugoslavia put the people first. But my big worry is all these private armies and militias, because I keep going back to the Middle East, and I know the Middle East, I have many friends in the Middle East, and I'm deeply worried about that. Yet I think, can this be the Middle East in Europe? deeply, deeply concerned about this. Also, let's not forget a very important factor. We're talking about Bosnia-Herzegovina of yesterday, the declaration, the parliament making that resolution, and so on, which we must examine very carefully, like all the other factors, the Macedonian situation, and so on. But all hope is not lost, because negotiations can always work out some form of whatever it may be, a common market, a loose binding confederation, or whatever you want to call it.
Would you summarize that as the famous phrase, there is no last word in democracy, in diplomacy?
There is no, diplomacy is a continuing effort. It has always been through the ages. Things have been resolved. But also, you see, the great problem of today is the question of minorities. You have in Croatia, the borders which were drawn out during the dictatorship of Tito, it encompasses whatever the figure is, 12-13%, 800,000 Serbs. And these Serbs are not neatly compartmentalized into one area. They're like pockmarks. The same goes for Croatians into Bosnia and so on. If you look at the map, and I have a fantastic map produced by the Geographical Institute of Zagreb, it is color everywhere, different colors. It's a nightmare. And I think what we don't want to do is move people traditionally from their traditional homes. People are attached to their homes. They've been living there for centuries. Can't we really work this out around a table, respecting each other, and giving, yes, if there are definite areas, which I think we must really examine, definite areas, which there are, let's give more autonomy to that area, whatever. Let's talk about it. Let's discuss it. And not shoot at each other and create umpteen refugees on both sides and children being moved out of their homes, mothers and so on, young people being killed, old people, people who are sick. This is not the way to do it. This is Europe. Is it Europe?
And yet you, I'm sure, are aware that a Croat, a Slovene, Macedonian sitting here with us would say, perhaps they wouldn't say it, but they might think it, ah, but this is all part of the greater Serbian plan. He is probably secretly envisaging a greater Serbia. So
I am not a person who is empire seeking. I am a person who, I don't have to do this, you know. I am a person who was brought up in the West, an innocent person who cares for people. Who has the interest, the best interest at hand for everybody. I tell you, it was very moving going to Belgrade and going to Oponac, seeing all my ancestors.
Tell me more about that.
It's very moving going to a place, a mausoleum, and you're seeing King Peter I's grave, Carol George's grave, magnificent chapel. You're seeing King Alexander's grave. And we must not forget King Alexander, the days of fascism before the war, the build-up of fascism, killed by two hired assassins, Montenegrin assassins, hired by fascists, and so on. We must put these days aside. Of course, it's hard to forget them, but this is Europe at the end of the 20th century, and the last fascist state in Europe was Franco's state, and it ended. What have we got today? Spain, one of the great democracies of Europe, 10th economic power of the world, success in the European community, decisive. That's what we should aim at, to produce out of Yugoslavia, whichever shape, form it takes through negotiations, a kind of Spanish solution. Yet our past is a communist past, which is also out of date. Naturally, there are good things from every political system. I strongly believe in a national health system. I strongly believe also in private care for those who can afford it. I mean, we must be allowed the choice. Now, socialism provides many positive things, and capitalism also. Now, let's allow the political parties to put these platforms forward. Also, to put their nationalistic points of view forward in a positive way. Language, customs, traditions, and so on, but not use it to go and hang each other. I mean, it's incredible. We had the worst civil war you can imagine. People forget, and I know there are many dear Croatians who will not subscribe to this, that during the Second World War, Croatia was a puppet state of Hitler. Hitler, underlined. Now, many Croatians would have no part of this. Many Croatians, along with Serbs and Jews and Gypsies, died at Jasenovac. And Jasenovac is a huge concentration camp.
Can you spell that for me? Because I don't know
that. Y-A-S-E-N-O-V-A-C. Jasenovac. Yeah. I got to get it right.
Absolutely.
And it's a disaster. I was in Israel the other day and at the monument there for the Holocaust, and it was very moving. 60,000 Jews, 800,000 Serbs, which include Croats, Slovenes, Gypsies also, anybody who was against fascism. And then you must also take into account the Tito massacres. Now the whole area was a disaster, the worst civil war you could ever see, worse than the Spanish one. And now today, are we aiming in the same way, this madness going on? We're going to have this situation with us for the next 50 years. We're going to examine this thing. Can the people of the region live happily, whichever they want, way they want, choosing democratically the future without the politicians using all these disasters of the history of the past, where we Serb can respect Croatian, Croatian can respect Serb, Slovenian, Macedonian, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Montenegrin, endless list. We can be done. It's working in Europe. It's working in Europe because take Belgium. Belgium is a multinational country. Spain is a multinational country. The United Kingdom is. The United Kingdom has many problems, sadly. I mean, we could say that the United Kingdom has been at war since 1969 with the Irish question. And every European is sad about it because there's been deaths.
I was going to take you back actually into English history and ask you whether you don't sometimes wonder, when you look at Yugoslavia today, whether we aren't looking at 16th and 17th century England with Bonnie, Prince Charlie in Paris, and a religious war, a war of bigotry, a political war which in fact ended up with the democracy that we have today.
Yes, but there must be hope. Yes, we remember our history from our school days very clearly. I did history.
I'm explaining this for the purposes of...
Yes, very good. Excellent. If we look at today, there must be hope because there was a meeting that did take place in Yugoslavia between Cardinal Šuštar of Slovenia and the Patriarch of Serbia. So you see, there can be that contact. They embraced. Now I'd like to see also Cardinal Kuharic of Croatia also do it. And I think naturally, like in all institutions, and we must respect religious institutions, their feelings also, their feelings. But there is a Christian base. What we're going to do is bring out the Christian base and put the white flag, I don't know why I'm saying white flag, put the flag of Christianity in Rome, in Ljubljana, in Zagreb, and in Belgrade. And I think this is important because we all worship, all of us, the same God, Christ, Virgin Mary, and so on. Are we seeing what you've just said, the historical factor haunting us, where we're living still very much in the past? There's one thing that's in our favor today, is telecommunications are quick. So we can assimilate things very quickly and sometimes prevent disasters of happening. But I think in Yugoslavia, there are many people who are scared because the area is historically volatile and people are very, very worried about their well-being, which includes not only people living there, but foreign correspondents, European community people, quite understandably. And I hate to see them get hurt.
Well, as a journalist, I appreciate that. And I'm going there next week.
Yeah.
Technology is beginning to run out on us. I have two questions I want to ask, two final questions. At 3 o'clock in the morning, or 4 o'clock in the morning, when you're awake, do you ever hear your father giving you advice as to what to do now?
Well, my poor father, he suffered a lot. Leaving the country when he was not even 18 years old, after the coup d'etat against the pact with the Nazis. He left, and the Germans came in, and they went down to Greece, Palestine, Egypt, and to England. And one thing he always said to me, he was a great believer in democracy, is one day there'll be democracy, help it happen, talk to everyone, treat everybody politely and correctly. That's what I've done. If he couldn't do it, I'm doing it. That's what I'm doing. And I think this is the only way to do it. If you look at all the leaders, if you look at all the kings and queens of today, the modern kings and queens, they're talking to everybody. All the political leaders are talking to everybody. Isn't this what we expect at the end of the 20th century? This birth of democracy. We expect it, and it must happen. Negotiations around the table. No killing people. But my big concern is we've got mercenaries now on all sides. Mercenaries which have been seen in Angola, Mozambique, and other parts of the world. British mercenaries also. There's an article today in The Guardian about it. And this is worrying. The dogs of war. I don't think I want to see Yugoslavia as the meeting point of the dogs of the war. They must go away.
My final question is that you have a son.
Yes.
And whatever happens, he is in roughly the same position as you were after your father's situation. I don't know how old your son is.
Well, I have three boys. Peter, who's 11, and Philip and Alexander, who are 9 years old, twins.
Well, let's take Peter, the eldest.
Yes.
What are you telling him, if anything, now?
I'm not creating any problems. He has an open mind. Should remind everybody that their mother is Roman Catholic. Huh? There we are. I deeply respect that. What I don't respect is religion being used for warfare. That I condemn. And only can come out in defense with words. My three boys are being brought up truly as young school children in the United Kingdom under the democratic principles of today. And I hope that will continue.